any horror movie, when you start splitting up, I know sometimes it sounds like a good idea, but that means that one of you is going to die alone. That's what that means.
I mean, you know, she's standing outside for so long. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? I'm so mad at you.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends, Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi, break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest,
and offering up horror movie survival guide tips
to help you stay alive.
Disco Citizens, it's time for Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia.
And I'm Terry, and I'm doing like that thing from What's Happening Now for the people who are old enough to know. Rod.
She's doing some sort of crazy dance move. I don't know what's happening.
Disco. It made me think disco. So I was like, burn,
that's right.
Baby, burn.
Clams on the half shell and roller skates. Roller skates. This is 2008's The Strangers. The title of this episode is Why Are They Doing This? Tagline for this movie is. Why are they doing this?
Yeah.
Tagline for this movie is, we tell ourselves there is nothing to fear, but sometimes we're wrong. So this was written and directed by Brian Bartino, although I do have an alternate universe director for you, which is very intriguing to me, is that apparently this movie could have been directed by Mark Romanek, which I think would have been fucking fantastic because I love him and his movies are like perfection.
I feel like I want to see that. I'm kind of sad.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Sorry, Brian Bertino. But if you're like, give me the Mark Romanek version, I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to see that version. I saw this movie when it came out in the theater. I remember going to see it. But I was reading about it beforehand. And so apparently every shot in this film has camera movement because they use almost a lot of just head cam. But and I was watching and I was like, okay, let's test that out. Is that true? And I was like, yeah, this movie. And it to a point where I'm like, I'm glad that shaky cam aesthetic is out of fashion now because it's kind of unpleasant.
It makes me sick. It makes me really seasick and like motion sickness. Yay, as I've gotten older, it's gotten worse. And I can't, it's really difficult. Like even like Blair Witch, watching that, like, you know, this last year, I was like, oh God, I can't.
Did this movie
that shaky cam. I didn't feel that bad, actually, compared to like, and I maybe if I knew that, I might have like been like looking for it in another way, but I did not know that. So I was okay. But I also was taking a lot of notes. So I don't know if that changes anything, me putting my head up and down, you know, and you know, maybe not catching everything, but just waiting for all the jump scares and all those little moments, you know,
because there's
a whole heck ton of jumpy scares in this whole thing.
This is kind of sort of based on true events. There were some murders that happened in California, the Keddie murders, where there was like half of a family was not there for the night. The other half, when they came back, found that the mom and some of the kids dead or missing. And it was nobody, they were trying to piece together what had happened. Like they were tied up and they were sad and they couldn't figure out why and nobody had heard anything. And so this was this kind of basis for it. So it's kind of sort of based, you know, it's one of those horror movies where like, it's based on true events. You're like, kind of, not really, but we, you know, we'll take liberties. But it is
everyone
open.
Takes liberties. It's like Fire in the Sky or whatever. You're like, yeah, okay, yeah. Sure, guy.
You got to Hollywoodize it always. So, but we do have a title card that says, what you're about to see is inspired by true events. According to the FBI, there are an estimated 1.4 million violent crimes in America each year. And on the night of February 11th, 2005, Christian McKay and James Hoyt left a friend's wedding reception and returned to the Hoyt family summer home. The brutal events that took place are still not entirely known. So we are trying, and you know, this is one of those things where I can't imagine as an investigator walking into something, a crime scene at the end, and be like, you have to work backwards. Like, how did this happen? How did this handprint get here? How did this stab wound get there? Like, it's a whole level of puzzle doing that I can't even imagine.
I couldn't even fathom it. No, I wouldn't want to do it either. But also, like, I feel like it would feel impossible, you know, in a lot of ways, right? Like, it's just like, no, I don't know. it's a lot of moving parts. And then when they do, like, I don't know, it makes me, reminds me of those like SCV or like episode or like the splatter, like whatever, or NCIS, yeah, or you're like, I don't know, you know, based on how this looks, because they move the bodies around so much. Like, there's a lot of misdirection, obviously, in this movie, because there's more than one killer. You're dealing with three, at least, you know, and then, yes, also the victims that end up being killers as well, because they're trying to, you know, defend themselves. So, yeah, it's difficult. But also, starting on the most tragic moment of a girl saying no when you propose. Oof. Oof, oof. And you did it at your friend's wedding because everyone's like feeling the moment and you had it ready to go, and you pull her aside from the wedding. Like, of course, that's usually when girls are like thinking about it. I feel like, yeah, you're at a wedding, you're like, you're aware of your boyfriend or partner, and you're like, oh my gosh, like maybe they're going to ask me. And it's like, maybe we're next. Maybe she caught the bouquet. And then it's like, she has a resounding no.
Yeah. So when they, you know, the car ride is glacial.
Somber.
And she's crying, and when they get back to the cabin, it is covered in rose petals and their champagne and candles, and he's so prepared. And I can't, like, who would feel worse? I don't know. Both of them would feel awful. So I think it's interesting to start with your characters in this situation, right? They're not coming in as like, oh, we're going away for the weekend, we just got engaged. Like, they're coming in like already having a bad night.
Like, really intensely bad. And so they're already distracted. They're already, you know, looking for vices in their own way. Like, you know, she's, you know, a chain smoker. And then, you know, she taps. She's like, might as well drink it since it's here. Taps into that champagne. And it's like, so sad. Like, I just.
Yeah. So they go into separate rooms. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel for both of them.
And even have like a beautiful negligee for her. Like, so like they had packed her clothes, and like, I think he like enlisted a friend like to help bring her stuff out there too. So like they had it really set up for her. And he's like, I don't even know if I'm supposed to put the rose petals in before the bath or after, like when she run the water. And like, I mean, just.
And all your friends know, and all your friends have been helping you set up, and they're like ready for you to be excited, and now it's not exciting at all. So he calls his friend Mike to come and pick him up as soon as possible, because I just got to get out of here. So they try to talk, and it is one of those things, and we don't ever get the reason of why she said no, right? She says she's not ready, but that's all we really ever get. So it's clear they're in love with each other still. That's not the issue, but there's something else that's not quite clicking for them. I mean, he is Scott Speedman, so maybe that's the problem.
As soon as I saw him, I'm sorry, Julie, you're such a hater. As soon as I saw that he was in this, like once I started, and I was like, oh no, I was like, Julia doesn't like this guy. Like, okay, he's too all American for Julia. Julia does not want an American boy. She wants a British boy, probably, who, you know, looks like a beetle, most likely, you know, tall, skinny, moppy haired. Like, that's what you need, what you want. And this guy is not any of those things. And also, he's the guy who looks buff, but you can tell from their conversations as they continue talking that he's the guy who's had a lot of bravado, but that's not who he is as a person. Like, he's really like this like sweet mousy guy. And I think she wants somebody tougher. And I feel like that's what comes across as the movie progresses.
He's not bad in this film. I will say he's not bad.
He's good in this one. I think he's better in this one than he is in the Moth thing that we saw, the Moth Diaries.
I definitely agree. I feel, but he's got a more meaty role here. So I think that, you know, he's got much more to work with. So they try to talk, and they're actually about to have some sex when there's a knock on the door at 4 a.m. And there was a blonde girl standing there who we don't see her face. She's in shadow, but she can see backlit. So it's a blonde girl with a blonde hair, and she asks for Tamara and leaves. So I also,
they're like, no, wrong house. Like, sorry, lady, are you okay? She seems like she's on drugs or something, looking for like a meth house or something. She's got that vibe to her. And they're in the woods of like California, which can also, that's can kind of happen out there, you know, where you're having like a real party.
They're in the middle of nowhere, and it's 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so so it's all very odd. And so apparently this was, I read that Brian Bertino had this event happened to him when he was a kid, where a stranger came to the door and asked for Tamara. I said Tamara was there and left. And then they found it the next day, a bunch of the houses in his neighborhood had been robbed. So he knew that he had like come, like brushed against danger. And so that's where like the impetus of this came from. So isn't it interesting where art can come from?
Yeah, well, art, life, imitating life, art, you know, always in a big full freaking circle. Absolutely true. And so they both remark that that was weird, because it was a weird kind of occurrence to happening. And they were like, well, you know, they locked the door, and He fixes the light bulb because it looks like someone had turned it down. Like maybe she had touched the light bulb and made it less light outside so that her face was obscured. He says, I'm going to light you a fire. And he realizes that she's about to be out of cigarettes. He's like, hey, I'm going to go grab you some cigarettes. I was like, no, don't leave her now that they just had some random person stop by. I was like, this is the moment where you don't leave the house. But
okay. So this is the thing about this movie. I went in very excited for this movie because I was like, it's people in a room talking, right? It's like all types of place in one cabin. We know Julia loves this. There's a randomness factor to this that I also really enjoy, right? Like just random violence. I like that. But these characters make the stupidest fucking decisions throughout this whole movie. And I can't. I hate them. And I'm like, you just are so stupid. What are you doing? So I don't know if that's because I'm a Final Girl survival horror movie nerd who've seen too many movies, right? Like this is, but I feel like everybody who watches this movie has this reaction. Like you have very smart characters doing incredibly stupid things. First of all, like we're going to go to sleep soon. I don't need fucking cigarettes. Also, there's a fucking weirdo outside. What are you doing, man? Like I understand your fight. So there's going to be a lot of this.
He obviously wanted some like breathing in space, right? And so he just called his friend. So he, I think, wants to like get out of the tension for a little bit because they were about to have sex. And then the moment was ruined by this random girl, right? So, but she also does all these bad things. Like while he leaves, like she reaches to her, drinks more champagne. And like he drinks a bottle of champagne before he drives, which is, I'm just like, oh. Rule number one, you know, like don't drink and drive, especially if you're angry like that. That's probably not going to help you in the middle of these country roads. How far away is the nearest freaking store?
Is
probably not close.
Open at that hour? I mean, these
no,
are questions,
No, not
right?
up that way. No, if you're in the real mountains of California, no, that shit closes at like 8 o'clock. You know what I mean? Though it's like nothing's open super late. But she's alone and she hears the door knock again. And the girl asks again through the door for Tamara. And she lives like, I'm going to lock this deadbolt. And the fire all of a sudden gets extra smoky. Like somebody has like fucked with the flue chimney. Or whatever, the chimney. And so the alarm gets set off. So she's having to take down the smoke alarm, which is also like this moment where all of a sudden you're going to get a confluence of sounds. Because while that sound is happening to make a distraction, we're going to go loud banging knock at the door.
Mm-hmm. So she just calls James from the landline and talks to him there
because her flip phone is dead, and so she had plugged it in.
Yes, important. But call 911, right? Like cops should be first priority. Like there's somebody outside my house. It was one thing if the person just knocked once. Now they knocked twice, and they're clearly like still outside your house. So, Final Girl horror movie spy guy tip. If you have the phone line, use it to call the cops first. And then, of course, the phone goes dead because they cut the phone line and now you're fucked.
But also, the cops usually are useless in a horror movie. So I don't know. I don't know, Julia.
Are,
what do we do? In real life, though, call the cops. But anyway, or I don't know, whatever you need to do. But she also puts on clothes because she's in a negligee. She's like, I'm going to put on some clothes if I need to run. Like, but she doesn't put on shoes. So I was like, okay.
Doesn't put on shoes. This whole fucking movie doesn't put on
shoes.
She's
like eventually running outside with no shoes. And I'm just like, girl.
What are you doing?
Honestly, feet pics. They're trying to sell her feet. Trying to live Tyler's beautiful feet. Okay.
She does get a knife. She is freaked out enough to have a knife. So she does have a knife in her hand. And they take her cell phone. So we find out. They throw her cell phone in the fire. She doesn't realize it's in the fire. We as an audience do. Cell phone's gone. So she is now cut off for the rest of the world. She starts to freak out. This isn't happening. And then sees a man through the window with a bag over his head and a woman with a doll face mask. And then James comes and she's like, tells him what happened. And he doesn't believe her. Why?
Motherfucker. Why would she lie to you about that? Obviously, that's the thing I feel like with their relationship, partly why she doesn't want to marry him. They don't trust each other.
And
right?
She keeps saying that he doesn't listen to her. So...
He doesn't listen. And then he also, it sounds like he lies because she finds out later, like when, you know, he finally is like, okay, he, you know, looks around the house and clears each room and is like, okay, it's fine. But all of a sudden it's not fine because they see somebody has written some shit like, hello, 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 like in lipstick, basically on one of their window from the inside. And he's like, I guess there has been somebody in here. So he starts looking for his gun, you know, and like, they're like, okay, she's like, where's the gun? And he confesses to her, I don't know how to shoot this thing. I never did. She's like, didn't you go hunting with your dad all the time? He's like, no, I always just said that, but I didn't actually ever do that. So we find out that he's been hiding, you know, who he is as well, which I think is partly why she felt not close to him, you know?
They have also destroyed the car, so the car is not drivable. They have flattened the tires. They have smashed the windows. They try to leave anyway on the rims when a truck shows up and just rams them, so they have to go back in the house. Again, she's running through glass. She has no shoes on, but that's where we are. So they end up chopping in the front door with an axe in a very Jack Torrance-like way, and they end up hiding with the gun. And this is the first point in the movie I'm like, yes, just sit there and hide with the gun. Just sit there. Don't keep wandering
out. They're too uncomfortable and they want to figure it out. And like, they think they're smarter than whatever the heck is coming towards them. But it's like, you don't even know what it is, dude. You don't even know how many people at this point. Right.
And I mean, for me, like my strategy in horror movies is always 100% find a hiding place with a locked door and stay there.
Yeah.
And just stay there. Like, you're probably gonna get killed anyway, but at least you're not like there's so many of these crazy things. So Mike arrives to pick up James. So he is the strangers end up throwing a rock through his car. He comes into the house, sees the place is destroyed, and is looking for them, and James ends up shooting Mike right in the face with a shotgun because he thinks it's one of the intruders. And now they think that it's all been like in their heads, like there really wasn't somebody else, but they know
someone was there because they saw the writing on the wall and stuff like that literally earlier, or on the mirror or in the window. But they are also now feeling misdirected because, again, they don't know how many people. And then James also is obviously in shock because this is like his bestie who he had called his like biggest confidant to come pick him up after being heartbroken. So it's like, what have I done? I didn't even, you know, do this right. It's pretty bad. It's pretty, pretty bad.
So he decides he's going to go out and find the radio in the barn.
There's a CB radio out there, so some form of communication.
And when the strangers have written killer in lipstick, so they know, they let him know that they know that he killed him. And so then
she wants to go out with him to the thing. And he's like, let's split the party constantly. I'm like, dude, let her be with you. Like, again, don't split Julia. Don't split the party. It's like D&D rule number one, right? You don't split the party. You want to keep the party together. Any horror movie, when you start splitting up, I know sometimes it sounds like a good idea, but that means that one of you is going to die alone. That's what that means.
I mean, you know, she's standing outside for so long. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? I'm so mad at you. You're such a
just this target on the front porch, just staring. Right. And looking, and she looks so sad.
and these strangers, they have a very, there's a lot of this movie of them kind of appearing and disappearing in a way that I don't think they're supposed to be supernatural at all. I think they're just weirdo fucking humans. But
yeah,
they try to push it in that way almost, where like they're supernaturally fast or able to sneak up on people. Like, there's so much of that.
They're just really quiet, and they like will like, you know, touched James on his like back of his neck when he was like in the car looking at them, you know, for something that had fallen in the bottom, you know. So it's just they have weird little brushes with them that are just fucking with them. Like, having a joy of just fucking with them.
Yeah, it's cat and mouse fun. This is their evening that they had planned, and they've been planning it, and here it's all going, and they're having a great time. So she tries to get out to the barn, but hurts herself, her ankle. And wandering around the barn in the dark with a flashlight for a long time, she tries to use the radio, but the radio, one of the girls, so we have Pinup Girl and Dollface are the names of the characters, and it just says Man in Mask. That one doesn't have a name, but they end up smashing the radio to bits, but she gets away, and then they set their car on fire. And so now she is back in the house, and the man is inside, and she hides in the pantry.
And she hears them like playing the piano, and like there's like all kinds of stuff that you're just like, the soundscape on this movie is great for like fucking with you too. You're like, okay, I don't know where that sound's coming from. You can hear the house, like all kinds of stuff.
So James comes back outside, and the man ends up knocking her out, dragging her into the living room, and then they are tied up together. So they are, you know, trying to find out why. So she finally asks the big question, why are you doing this to us? And the answer is because you were home. And I like it. I do like that. I like that it's just completely random, had nothing to do with you. There's nothing you can say to get out of it. It's just, this is what we are planned for us. And it could have been anybody and it happened to be you. Mm-hmm. Which is the scariest thing. I think that's the scariest thing there is, where there is no motivation. It's just random.
No freaking motive. Full sociopath group. And they're like, you're going to die. And so he tries to tell her to like run or get out of there. Like, you know, it's like, what are they going to do? And then he's going to get stabby stabbed first. And she watches him and looks in his eyes. And he's like, just look in my eyes. And they try to like be lovers at the end. And it's just, you know, you're about to both get murdered.
And they do, the strangers do take their masks off, but we don't ever see their faces. So we come back around where we in the beginning we hit, there was some little Mormon boys who were going by to give him pamphlets, Christian boys. And they had found the bodies. So they end up seeing the strangers as they drive by, and the girl comes out to get a pamphlet and tells the other girl that it will be easier next time. So they find the bodies, little boys find the bodies. And when they grab see if Kristen is still alive, she screams and grabs them for your last jump scare.
Yep.
Which feels a little cheap, that last jump scare, to be honest, but I get it.
Well, it's surprising if she made it, right? Like, you're just like, I don't know how she would survive all of that. Scene.
This is one of those episodes where I feel slightly guilty, because a lot of people have asked us to cover this film, and
people
I
are obsessed with this movie.
And there's and as I said, there's a lot of things about it that I really enjoy, but I can't get past the stupid decision making in this. And like, I want, and I know that there's sequels, and I know there's a new one coming out, and I'm sure that they'll do different things with it. But the ideas of random people going to random houses to murder all night, interesting, but.
I prefer The Purge if we're going to go for a random murder night. I like that there's like a framework for it. This just is like, I don't know. I don't want to say I was bored, but I wasn't like excited. Okay. You know what I mean though? Like, I don't know. And I honestly, it's just so bad too. I know you with your Speedman, me with Liv Tyler, I freaking love her, but she's an elf for me. Like, she's like, will always be a Lord of the Rings. I will bring it back. One of the shows I guessed it on this last year, Podcast of the Rings. Love her as a freaking elf. And I don't know. They were both so annoying to me as a couple as well. I think so it's I was just like, yeah, they should die. Like, I don't know. Wishing them to die, but like, I was okay with them dying.
Yeah, I always have to ask, like, do you think it's a casting problem? But I don't think it is. I think it's just a script problem. I think it's just these characters make dumb decisions. So, you know, and that's the thing, is like, I would really like to see Mark Romanek's version, but Mark Romanek's version would still be the script. It would be the same. So it would just be visually different, right? So
yeah.
I think if you just alter these, because there's a lot of things about it that I want, I don't know. So maybe the sequels will give me more of what I want.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm down to try. I'm always down to try and always and look at stuff. But I guess this is just not my jam. I guess we found the sweet spot that I don't really like as much either, Julia, and it's mm-hmm. the years between 2005 and 2012.
Okay. Interesting.
Of horror. I feel like it's just a lot of it just feels, I don't know, I don't know what it is about it. Doesn't have the same, like, I don't mind modern stuff. Like, I like the newer things that are happening right now.
But I think it's
this era just doesn't scare me in that way. I'm like, oh, okay.
But it's interesting to look back and see the mm-hmm. kind of patterns of an era of horror that kind of similar films come out and look very similar.
The color correction of the sepia color correction, sure. You know, that of this time and the big suits. But Liv was like such an it girl. So it's like, it's interesting too, because like, I know. I think you watched it with somebody who's younger who hadn't seen or didn't really know who she like was like for culture. Like, she was in every music video, you know. Her and Alicia Silverstone were like iconic and just like, you know,
and
were the girls.
I think she's good in this. And I think she, you know, she's very good at acting scared. And I think that they both do. I think the performances are great. I just think the characters are questionable, make questionable decisions. And it's hard for, you know, it's hard for a horror fan to you. There's a suspension of disbelief that you have, because there can be a kind of fun, like, girl, what are you doing? Get back in the house. No.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun to a point where then I'm like, no, you're just an idiot.
Yeah. This wasn't fun for me. Yeah. I was just like, wow, really? He's leaving right now to go get cigarettes in the middle of the fucking woods. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, That's just after this random person knocks on your door. This sounds like the worst, unless he was like, maybe she'll get killed. Like, maybe, you know, I don't know. Like,
maybe he's in on it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I thought about that because they, you know, sometimes they show the guy with the suit and he was wearing a suit that night. And the guy with the bag head had a suit. So I wasn't sure if they were trying to misdirect with like how that guy was dressed.
That would be cool. If he was part of it and like putting the bag on and off throughout the night.
That's what I was like, that would be interesting to me too. Or even like Mike showing up because he had the suit, like that was like a fun little misdirect too, but he could have been, you know, there could have been more with that. So I, that's my thoughts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So some gore factor for us. Would you
like how do we survive? Did we say how we survive?
I mean, I call the police and... Uh-huh. Lock yourself in a room with a gun and don't move.
And if you say no after the thing, maybe don't go to the romantic cabin after the wedding.
Where else is she going to go?
Maybe go home
in the mornings.
Maybe I'll go home. I don't know wherever that is, wherever Mike came from.
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, obviously don't answer the door at 4 a.m. and keep all your doors and windows locked and, you know, be smart. even running out to the barn for the radio feels dumb to me, and I'm like, come on, like that. Okay, I'm trying, and I do try to go into every movie with and I had seen it before, so I knew what to expect. It wasn't like I was going in blind, you know. And I came in, I hadn't seen it since 2008, and I'm like, I'm giving it another whirl, right? Because I remember not being crazy about it, but I also know a lot of people like it, so I'm like, okay, give me another try, and you know, want to like it more than I do, sadly. So gore factor: 1, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup; 2, puddle of blood; 3, enough blood to gross out the average viewer; 4, it's a bathtub of blood; 5, is run for the barf bag. This is a 5. This is run for the barf bag. We get some stabby stabbing going on.
Lots of stabby stabs
and a shotgun blast to the face.
Yeah, the guts on the wall from the head. Yeah, from the face. Yeah, that's a lot. Beautiful work. Chainsaws: 1, if you're desperate; 2, barely qualifies as a horror film; 3, seen worse, seen better; 4, not too shabby; 5, fantastic oracle. It's a 3 for me. Solid 3.
And I gave it a 3.5. So tell us what you think about The Strangers, because our minds are open, always willing to be changed. If you have a theory or you have something else that you think about this that we didn't talk about, or if
we should watch the sequels for sure. Like, let us know. Do you think we're going to be excited about the sequels based on what we talked about today? I'm very curious. Yes. From our horror friends to let us know.
Mm-hmm. And we love you, horror listeners. So you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We do have a Patreon if you would like to subscribe and get some bonus goodies from us. We also have a Teespring if you'd like to support and buy some merch. We have t-shirts, and we have mugs, and we have totes, and we have all sorts of stuff. I have 2 other podcasts if you're interested in listening.
You're cheating on me? Are you doing other shows, Julia? Okay, they're really good. I love them.
You can listen to me talk about Alejandro Jodorowsky on Jodorowsky. And also, I have a Stephen King podcast called The Losers Club. Terry and I also do a show with George A. Romero Foundation called Horror X, which is a video show, which we talk to women and femmes in horror about their careers. So that is, if you want to see our faces, that's for you.
We're so cute. I highly recommend it, you guys. We're pretty cute. So join us there, here, and everywhere. We'll see y'all next week. Let us know what you think. Yay!
Yay!
Don't be a stranger.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.